ಅಜ್ಞಾನತಿಮಿರಾಂಧಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಾಂಜನಶಲಾಕಯ ಚಕ್ಷುರುನ್ಮೀಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ಗುರುರ್ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಗುರುರ್ವಿಷ್ಣು ಗುರುರ್ದೇವೋ ಮಹೇಶ್ವರಃ ಗುರುಸ್ಸಾಕ್ಷಾತ್ ಪರಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ಧ್ಯಾನಮೂಲಂ ಗುರೋರ್ಮೂರ್ತಿಃ ಪೂಜಾಮೂಲಂ ಗುರೋರ್ಪದಂ ಮಂತ್ರಮೂಲಂ ಗುರೋರ್ವಾಕ್ಯಂ ಮೋಕ್ಷಮೂಲಂ ಗುರೋರ್ಕೃಪಾ. ಓಂ ಸಹನಾಭವತು ಸಹನೌ ಭುನಕ್ತು ಸಹವೀರ್ಯಂ ಕರವಾವಹೈ ತೇಜಸ್ವಿನಾವಧೀತಮಸ್ತು ಮಾ ವಿದ್ವಿಷಾವಹೈ. ಓಂ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ. ಇನ್ ವಾಟ್ ವಿ ರಿಗಾರ್ಡ್ ಎಸ್ ಸತ್ಸಂಗ್, there is really no need for someone or anyone to talk. But for those of you who are new to this feature in yoga practice, I might offer a few words of explanation probably. What does this word satsang mean? Sometimes people ask, what is satsang? What is satsang? It's quite simple. It is it is sat and sang. S-A-T-S-A-N-G, it is sat and sang. We all sat, we all sang. And often it amounts to that, or it is reduced to that pitiable situation when people assemble, sit for some time, sing, glorious, it's lovely entertainment. And somehow it provides a sort of change that the mind clamors for. And so people are quite satisfied and they go away. I don't know if it happens in the United States. It happens in quite a number of other countries like Australia, South Africa. Take for instance long weekends like the Easter weekend. People who are living on the seaside, they rush inland. People who live in Durban, they must go to Johannesburg for a holiday. And people who are living in Johannesburg, they must go to the seaside for a holiday. I often look and stand and bewildered and wonder, what exactly are they doing? If all the happiness is there, they must go, everybody must go there. If all the happiness is there, everybody must go there. No, people want change. Quite a number of you, I am quite sure, you are here only because you wanted a change. You must all have been in heaven. And probably you got bored with heaven and you wanted a change and so came to Los Angeles, I think. People could get bored with nearly anything. And so, if I have been working throughout the day, in my own office, workshop or what have you, and I come to a place, center like this, and sit and sing an unusual lifestyle, an unusual happening in my daily life. This doesn't happen at other places, at other times. So I feel highly elevated in the sense that we are sitting on the first floor. And after about half an hour or 1 hour of this, go away. There is certainly a lot of negative good in this, even if you don't understand what satsang means. Swami Shivananda used to remark very often that if a man sitting and pretends to meditate for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, in effect going into a deep hypnotic state, if not sleep, he would say, well, that's all right. At least for those couple of hours, he didn't tell a lie, he didn't abuse anybody, he didn't fight with anybody, he didn't smoke, he didn't drink, and you know, to that extent he has contributed to human welfare, if you understand what I mean. It may mean nothing, but there it is, negatively. There may be a sort of negative advantage in merely sitting and singing. But I'll give you a little story which I read in a booklet on precious stones and gems. One of the early European settlers in South Africa bumped into an African. And that African was bare-bodied. He had a string, probably a cotton string. And suspended at the end of the string was quite a biggish stone. And this gentleman asked him, what is this? He said, oh, this is, it wards off all evil. It drives off spooks and ghosts and that sort of thing. And this man looked at it a little more carefully. It was diamond. One of the biggest diamonds. This African happened to find it somewhere and he picked it up. He found it, it was very dazzling or something. And, you know, dazzling means things come shooting out of this stone. And naturally, all these ghosts must be frightened of this shooting light. Must keep these ghosts away. Oh, yes. Probably as soon as he found this, he got a better job or his wife smiled at him. Something nice happened. Something nice happened to him. And so he said, this brought me good luck. I let it hang around my neck. And this Mr. So-and-so took it away from him. That was the misfortune. And now I believe it is on the crown of the Queen of England. It is on the crown of the Queen of England. I'm not saying one is better than the other. But I suppose we wouldn't heartily appreciate an African suspending a lovely diamond at the end of a string and wearing it as ghost redeemer. Things have a certain intrinsic meaning, and if we discover that meaning, it is more fruitful, that's all. Satsang may have its own negative advantages, but it has a certain significance, a certain meaning. If I understood that meaning fully and clearly, it is possible to derive greater advantage, greater benefit from it. Champagne is a very good deodorant. Not many would like to use it that way, you know? That sort of thing. Sat, in this compound word, satsang, sat means truth. Sang, to keep company with the truth. It has also been extended, this word sat has been extended to cover not only truth but holy men, holy people, saints, saviors, yogis, etc., etc. not only truth, but knowers of the truth. To keep company with them is considered good. Why is it so? Because their association reminds us of the truth. It is not that we are in any satsang, we are going to hear anything new in this world. There's nothing new in this world. You go on from one Swami to another, one center to another, one group to another. They all say the same thing over and over again. Someone may say it a bit more grimly and someone may say it a bit more jovially. But essentially the truth is the same. If that is so, what is the need for this constant repetitive satsang? Is it not enough if I went to somebody and heard the glorious message? Or I may go on watching my life, trying to understand where I live, in what kind of circumstances, in what conditions. Our daily life is supposed to teach us all the lessons that we need learn concerning the truth. Is this not enough? It's not. It's not. Unfortunately, it's not. I go to a master, listen from him a great, wonderful, shocking truth. But it evaporates, spirit. The spirit of the teaching evaporates. Not only the bottle spirit, all spirit evaporates. You keep it well corked or keep it open, whatever you do, it evaporates. That's the nature of spirit. So even the spirit of the teaching can evaporate, disappear. Just this evening, I received a letter from my friend. She's in trouble. And after having completely got into a muddle, right to the bottom of the soup, she says, I picked up the notes that I had made when I was in Mauritius with you, and I see that all these things refer to the situation that I am in. But yet, it didn't help her to avoid getting into the soup. Only when you get in, when you get into the soup, when you are drowned, then you start sticking out your tongue. Oh, I see, it is soup and not swimming pool. You could have done it before jumping into it. But it's difficult. I don't know if it's difficult or not difficult. But it doesn't happen. I don't know whether it is difficult or not difficult or whether it is possible or impossible. But if you examine your own life, it doesn't happen. And therefore, the need for this repetitive satsanga. There is one great danger in this repetition again. We may go to sleep. I'm not against any of these, even this music, even for instance, even this kirtan singing and so on, it's lovely, beautiful. And it could be elevating, it could be inspiring. I'm not against this. I love a certain amount of ritual, a certain amount of singing and dancing, and all this seems to be beautiful. But if you go to a church or a temple or a synagogue or what have you, where people sing and dance and, you know, the hymns and the hearse and the... ever so many lovely piped music. I wonder if you have ever heard this. Have you? If you sit and listen to this, what do you hear? Do you hear the music or the words? The music. Even the choir, they are so frightened of losing their lines, you know, that sort of thing, going out of tune or out of the time. So they are very rigidly holding their book and looking here and there. They are not reading. They are, of course, saying the words. But they are not reciting the hymn, is that right? They are so terribly involved in the business of chanting and singing. And the listeners too, we get so wrapped up in the beautiful melodious hymns and all. And then we try to pick out our own favorites. Ah, his voice is gorgeous and, you know, that sort of thing. One has to be very careful here too. And then again, the truth, the sat, the truth, which is heard or which is read again and again and again, might become too familiar to us. Huh? I can read the Bible, I can read the Gita sitting in my room. It becomes familiar. It loses its edge, its keenness. It's gone. I can read it, I can recite it. I'm an expert. I become a theologian or a pundit. And there again, the truth is lost. It has slipped right through my fingers. I tried to grasp it, but it has slipped right through my fingers. And therefore, there is need for confronting this truth in a different atmosphere, in a different context, in a different company, where we could be receptive, where we could be of an inquiring state of mind, not merely accepting or rejecting. The satsang is not a discussion affair. It is not a study circle. The truth which has been given to me came to me as words. And the words are in themselves nothing more than sound, noise. Do words have any other, say, significance at all? Words are noise. If you understand this very carefully, words are nothing but noise. The noise with a little, some slight inflection here and there. Have you heard such a Chinese or Japanese talk in front of you? It meant nothing to you at all. You stood there and blinked. All words look alike. Have you noticed this tragedy? All words sound exactly alike. And yet they seem to be conversing. And it's so meaningful to them. What does one do? Bewildered, you look at them and you suddenly realize that the word is received, the word is transmitted, the meaning is in the hearer. Only a word can be transmitted, communicated, but the meaning is with the hearer. If I went to him and he uttered a few words, he merely shouted. It was just noise, nothing more than noise. But the meaning was within me, and that meaning was really and literally unveiled. A thing might remain unveiled for ages, That diamond was probably lying there for ages. One has to take it. One has to see it. To see is to take. I don't think many of us will be able to resist the temptation of picking up the diamond if we saw it. A thing might remain revealed for a long time, but I must see it. I first hear the noise, hear the sound, and the sound enters into me. The meaning is already lying hidden within me. That sound, that noise unveils this meaning that lies hidden within me. Then I must look at it. I must become conscious of it. Then this noise becomes terribly significant. That which was pure and simple noise becomes terribly significant. That again is the meaning of satsanga. When you attend the satsanga, where somebody reads from some scripture or something like that, some book, you are attentive. Possibly there is a little bit of mystery here too, because I don't know what he is going to read. He is picking up a book and opening it and watching curiously. What is he going to do? And so there is a certain amount of curiosity, there is a certain amount of inquisitiveness, and therefore there is a certain amount of attentiveness. And also all this singing and so on puts us in a different mood altogether. In that mood, in that state of mind, in that state of receptivity, when I listen to it, you suddenly discover a meaning which had never occurred to you before. A meaning which had never occurred to you before. And we often, we have two great remarkable qualities as human beings. One, we take things for granted. Two, we get bored. Very easily. If you watch our relationship, if you watch your relationship with other of your own friends, you will notice these two predominant characteristics. One, you take things for granted. Vasudev, I know him. I don't know him. I knew him, no doubt. 2 years ago I met him. I knew him. But I don't know him now. All the time we take things for granted. I believe it is George Bernard Shaw who said that of all the people in the world whom I have met, the only wise person is my tailor. When he was asked to explain, it seems he said, he is the only man who takes my measurement every time I see him. Every time I go to him, he takes my measurement again. It doesn't say, all right, I took his measurement 5 years ago, it's all right. In the meantime, he might have put on some weight or lost some weight. So a good tailor takes your measurement every time you go. Whereas most of us, we take things for granted. In human relationship, it's one of the most disturbing elements. And the other thing is, you get bored, familiar. In the same way, one can take things for granted. Have you read the Bible? Of course I have read the Bible. I went to Sunday school regularly. That was 20 years ago. Even the Bible has changed in the meantime. See the trouble? I am changing. We are all changing all the time. We are all growing up or growing down. Somehow we continue to grow. And in the meantime, all these things are also changing. How can I take anything for granted here? I must look at it again. When you read it again, you find amazing new meanings. Taking things for granted and thinking it's quite familiar. You know, I went to Madagascar once. And they asked me to give you a few talks on the Gita. The local Malagasy people, like your American Indians here, they were keen. There were quite a few of them who were interested in the Gita. And then a few French people who knew, who could speak English, they came along. But there was a sizable Indian community there. None of them turned up. None of them was interested. One day, my host happened to meet in my company an Indian resident in Tananarive, and he introduced me and so on and so on. And said that the Swami is giving very interesting talks on the Gita. Oh, I know Gita, I know. He's talking to this, my host, this Malagasy gentleman. You know, there are these two are the greatest names in Indian mythology and legend, Sita and Gita. And Sita was the elder daughter and Gita was the younger one. I said, remarkable. Sita was the elder daughter and Gita was the sister. Gita was Sita's younger sister. I said, beautiful. You take things for granted. You become so familiar with your own scriptures that you have forgotten what they mean, what they stand for. So it is necessary for us to remind ourselves as often as possible of the same old truths, without taking anything for granted and without assuming a familiarity or knowledge of them. You must watch within yourselves. When someone reads the Bible or something else, Gita or Upanishad, what have you, are you following the recitation or the reading? Or is your mind jumping ahead? I know this, of course. When you say, I know this, you have blocked yourself. You are not interested in the truth. When one thus attentively and receptively participates in a satsanga, then there is a subtle inner change which take place. A very subtle inner change. It's something imperceptible. It is something which you cannot show off, which is good for you. Because if there is a tremendously great and mighty change, we tend to show off, and that change is made meaningless. I have suddenly attained enlightenment. I go about marketing that enlightenment. Previously, I used to sell frocks. And now I sell enlightenment. The same thing. The stuff is the same. The business is the same. Only the commodity is different. So this change takes place so subtly that even you don't notice it. As you realize that all real growth is imperceptible. The growth of your own body. From day to day you have been looking into the mirror every morning. You didn't notice any change whatsoever. From day to day, from one day to the next day. And yet, from this size you have grown into that size. From this thing you have grown into that thing. If someone asked you on what day, during what part of the night, did you grow from 5 foot to 5 foot 1, you cannot say. It is imperceptible. It is happening all the time. And yet, one is not aware of this happening at all. That is real growth. Real spiritual growth comes without announcing, so that you are prevented from showing off. That is the value of satsanga. Truth is kept in sharp focus, is conveyed to us in different situations, in different contexts, in different stories, in different forms, so that this truth can filter into us, right through to us. When we are receptive, when we are not argumentative, when we are not discussing, arguing about is this right, is this not right, and it becomes part of us. Swami Shivananda used to conduct these satsangs in the ashram in Rishikesh. And nobody talked, nobody lectured, or nothing at all. We are also trying to adopt this procedure in some other places. And this is what happens. Somebody starts singing a few chants, and then on a predetermined pattern, someone reads some the Bible or the Quran or some Buddha's teachings or etc. etc. And what is important in the satsang is, in a meditative mood, I am listening to this reading, and as I hear the words read by anybody, I am not listening in effect to Ganga reading Dhammapada, but I am actually listening to Buddha himself saying those words. What was the real meaning of those words? Not the words. The words are not important at all. The words have no meaning at all, no significance at all, except noise. As those words strike my ear and tickle my brain, I am trying to look within and see how significant or insignificant are those words. Then you discover the truth from within yourself. It's a marvelous thing. It's a marvelous thing. If one adopts this attitude and procedure. Again, to repeat again, one should beware of getting familiar with any teaching. This familiarity or taking things for granted might create an illusion of knowledge. I think I know. I think I am capable of solving all these problems in this world till it comes to me. Huh? So long as it's someone else is in trouble. Oh, won't you? Many of us can offer remarkable advice, won't we? Remarkable advice. Till it comes to me, then it's a different matter. Because we have taken for granted that we are so wise, so enlightened, all these light shining through my hair only. We must have the courage to look within ourselves and to see if this is the truth for me. In other words, is the message coming from me or from the scripture? So long as it is coming from the scripture, it's of no use to me. Unfortunately, this word is in Sanskrit, used also in Hindi. The Hindi or Sanskrit expression for memorizing is kantastha. Kantastha. Kantastha means to put it in your throat. Probably what they meant was that he could recite, you know, the recitation is done with the throat. He could recite offhand without a reference book. Kantastha. And I was joking with somebody the other day. If you get the Gita kantastha, means stuffing it in the throat, you might choke and die. In other words, if you memorize something, you will feel heavy in the head. But the other expression is beautiful. Learn it by heart. Learn it by heart. That's a beautiful expression. I am not listening with my brain at all. That is what happens in satsanga. When your brain is not functioning in the normal way, not thinking, you are not receiving anything with your brain, you are in a devotional mood. The ears are open. That's one of those things, one of those organs which have been made to remain open constantly. And interesting, isn't it? Only these two, the nostrils and the ears are always open. The rest open, shut and do all sorts of things. And even between these two, whereas the nostrils perform a dual function of taking in and throwing out, the ears can perform only one function, taking in. They cannot throw anything out. It's significant. It's severe. Therefore, the idea being that you must be ready all the time to listen to something that is good. In the mouth, it's better to be shut, two lips and 32 teeth, to cut your tongue into slices if it starts talking too much. But still we manage to do it. To receive. The ears are open, so they are bound to receive these. But instead of going up there and getting lost in the brain cells, it must go right down and I must learn by the heart. That is what should happen in satsanga. And if it happens in that manner, then we are tremendously benefited.